Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Betts, Guy Barlow and George Singer from the Fulhamish podcast. And I'm absolutely delighted to be able to inform you all that Dom Betts said that he was going to film the first 10 minutes of the show. And we all said, all right, Dom, that's a good idea. We can do some stuff for social media. So he's promptly swiveled the tripod around and pointed it squarely at his own face. So you're all going to be treated to that at some point. But beyond the narcissism of one member of the Fulhamish podcast, how have we enjoyed the international break?
It's been great.
Yeah, it's been. I agree.
What's there to dislike? England scored 10 goals.
No Fulham.
Yeah, no, we did have to watch Fulham. What more do you want?
Yeah, you got the feeling of supporting a winning team.
I know, it was great. It was great to see. Lovely.
Were there any particular England highlights for any of you?
I think I love the system that we're playing. I think for so long we've seen turgid England performances playing, you know, great players playing together, but not in any kind of coherent style or not playing to the best of their abilities. And I think for the first time we actually saw a bit of a plan starting to form. We saw, you know, an adaptation of, you know, how Pep Guardiola likes to play at Man City. We saw the players in the right positions where they should be. And it's just great to see a young, charismatic England side doing well.
I agree. And that front three would terrify any single defence in the world of Sancho / Rashford and Sterling and Kane. That front four, whatever combination you play. And I mean, me and Dom are both going out to Porto this summer for the Nations League. Separate from each other, actually. But yeah. I'm sure we'll see each other there. But
Dom will be filming himself. Just look for the selfie stick and it'll be easily spotted.
But either way, I mean, Dom's been to a few ways before. It'll be my first trip of England. I absolutely cannot wait.
Exciting. I mean, 10,000 England fans in one place. What could possibly go wrong?
As long as there aren't any canals anywhere near Porto, it should be okay. In terms of the Fulham squad, no Fulham players excelling for England, but were there other players who were doing good things for their respective nations?
Ryan Babel missed two chances against Germany, which people are like, oh, he missed two sitters. No, they weren't sitters.
Talk us through them.
It was just crosses from the... I think they both came from the right, and he was coming in off the left wing, and he just hit it straight at Neuer both times. And, you know, Neuer's a big goalkeeper, but I think he did well to get in front of his man and get the shot away, particularly in the second chance, which was, you know, it was on the volley as well, which makes it harder. But yeah, he was taken off at half-time by Kim.
That's harsh. He's been a real revelation for Fulham, hasn't he? Because I have to admit, for my shame, that I and a lot of other people saw that you'd signed what I assumed must be a geriatric and passed it Ryan Babel and sort of laughed and went, right, OK, Fulham have really given up. But actually, since his arrival, he's been one of your most exciting players.
Well, he was very young when he was playing for Liverpool, and what is he, 30, 32 now, I think?
Yeah.
He's still got a fair bit of pace. He was brought in for one clear reason, which was to try and replace Abu Kamara, who we all knew for a little while was going to leave the squad, and we
surely
needed.
Not.
Yeah, but it looks like he's coming back, George.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah.
So is this Lone actually terminated. Happening? Because I assume that when Kamara left the club under all kinds of different clouds, that was very much it for his Fulham career. But
well, it seems he's not getting. He's doing well at his new club in Turkey. I think he missed a training camp they were doing during the international break. So that, like,
is he just a difficult bloke? Is that what we're dealing with here?
He's just a bit crazy, isn't he? Really? He's clearly a talented.
No, he's not.
I'm not gonna say footballer.
he's clearly not talented.
I'm not gonna say footballer. He's a talented athlete. He's huge. He's strong. He's so quick.
He can go play athletics then.
Yeah.
Go play athletics. Right. It's lucky that this was the point you chose to film yourself,
yeah.
Dom.
Yeah. So many times I've watched him and I thought there's a nugget of a great player there. And if he could just work out how to control a ball,
or
look
himself,
up and pass it,
indeed.
Or himself, there's clearly something up with his mental state. I don't know. I don't see him playing in a Fulham shirt again.
4-4-2 him in Roy Font next season.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Bring him back from second place Lille.
Who he's not playing for.
Exciting times for Fulham. Were there any other Fulham players in international action who caught any of your eyes?
Sessegnon lost last night for the under-21s. didn't he?
Yeah, that was one thing. People, we'll get onto later in the show, is how has the season sort of like stopped Ryan Sessegnon's development? Because you'd argue going into the summer, he would be ahead of the likes of Callum Hudson-Odoi going into the England squad. But obviously he's very, very far behind the pecking order now. He was playing left back for the England N21s last night. But, you know, the international break, it's been great thing to see. I mean, you know, love international football. Nothing beats it.
And you're obviously a real fan of the England youth teams as well. You referenced the under-21s there, who we think of them as this excellent side. They didn't have a great international break, losing to Poland and then Germany. But are there any players in there who impress you?
Well, like, I think with the under-21s, it's often a lot of players who aren't playing first-team football. You got Dom Solanke, he's gone to Bournemouth, but, you know, he's never really put himself into a first team. Obviously, he's been at Chelsea, he's been at Liverpool, he's now at Bournemouth. He was linked to going to Rangers in the summer under Steven Gerrard, which I think would have been a good move for him. You know, you've got Damari Gray, who's been impressive in bits for Leicester.
He flatters to deceive.
He does, and I think people do forget how young he still is, in Damari Gray. He's still a very young player, clearly, as he's in the under-21s. You know, Steven Sessegnon played well, I believe, for the England under-18s. So, I think for us, it's nice to see these good players coming through, but it's not this golden generation which everyone talks about.
But isn't it? I mean, we won the under-17 World Cup. Every youth level for England have been competing at the very highest level. So what is a golden generation if not that?
I think a golden generation you can't analyse until the generation has been gone. I don't think you can call them the golden generation if they're simply not the golden generation.
There's no such thing as the golden generation anymore, is there?
I think if you're looking at a Spanish national team from 10 years ago, you are.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. But you do talk about, I mean, the 2006 crop for England would have been the golden generation.
Well, arguably, yes. If you look at the lineup in the 2004 World Cup, but we decided we've got three great centre midfielders, but we're going to play 4-4-2 anyway. You know, why didn't you just play a 4-3-3 with Scholes, Lampard, Gerrard?
No, Scholes was always a left midfielder.
Clearly. I mean, because you have Beckham on the right, Joe Cole on the left, Rooney down the middle. What could go wrong?
Yeah, I think the other team, the golden generation, obviously Belgium, have got from out of nowhere just this crop of talent coming through, and I think Martinez has had the same issue of how do you actually fit all of these guys together in a system? And
how do you ruin a golden generation? Hire Bobby Martinez. You know, like, what a waste for them. But no, I mean it's going to be France. It's their golden generation now, isn't it?
They just seem to always have a good team, though.
But like, but they always fight, don't they? Like 2010 and 2002, they went on the group stage as well, didn't they? Like, but every other World Cup, they're rubbish, you know?
I also didn't realise that Kylian Mbappe has made like 28 consecutive starts for France now. It's just that's ludicrous.
And contributed like nearly close to 20 goals in that time as well.
Yeah, I think he's like the player to make the most consecutive appearances since like Patrick Vieira or something crazy.
Isn't
it
mad how like Giroud's like third top scorer
he's
in France's history?
Trezeguet, he's now on 36 goals. He's so underrated, Olivier. I'm a big fan. I really
agree.
Yeah.
But he's a bit like when Southgate called up Trippier, this is, oh, he's been terrible. Why is Aaron Wan-Bissaka not coming in? Well, I'd rather pick a player who's used to the way Southgate's been coaching him. He's suited to the team. Just because a player's in a good run of form in league doesn't automatically make him that he should come into the squad over someone else. Because if someone's critical in the squad over another player, let's say we look at Jordan Pickford, right? Jordan Pickford is critical to the way England play because he just gets the ball out the field so quickly. Same with Ross Barkley, another player I was really impressed with, because he gets the ball from defence to attack so quickly, which he may not be the most technically gifted midfielder, but he, for the way England play, he's so critical because he just gets the ball between our pretty bad defence and pretty bad midfield to our solid attack.
Well, I think that's where Southgate is. Rather than just picking the 11 best players and trying to squeeze them into a system, you've seen it with the defenders, like the centre-back, bringing someone like Harry Maguire in, who... Yeah, obviously he's grown into being an excellent defender, but when he first came in, probably not the best central defender on the world on merit, but he plays the right kind of football. He plays the way that Southgate wants to play. He can put the ball on the deck. He's comfortable on the ball, and he's really good with set piece as well. So I think for one of the first times, we're actually seeing the manager pick the players for the system that he wants.
Yeah, it's about the best team, not the best 11 players. We just quickly got to talk about Jordan Pickford's walk. What is going on there? Why is this man's chest protruding so far out from his shoulders?
Well, what was the tweet I saw earlier? When you walk out the bars with a fresh skin fade, I was like, yeah. But he's got keep the rave on his boots as well.
The rave on.
I just feel like he's sort of, if Alan Partridge were a footballer, he would be Jordan Pickford.
I think that's a bit harsh.
He's a great
man,
Jordan Pickford.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good goalkeeper. He did wonderful things in penalty shootouts for England. But if you watch him, in terms of an ego that is disproportionate from someone's ability, it's like me walking into training for England and going, I am fantastic, because he is not a goalkeeper of the level that justifies constantly shouting at everyone, sticking your chest out and strutting like a moron.
But he's not as tragic as Alan Partridge or anything like that. You know, he's still an international goalkeeper and a Premier League goalkeeper. Like,
Alan Partridge is an international broadcaster. I won't have any of that.
Of course.
Either way, bright times for England ahead, not least with certain Fulham players, Sessegnon's, both in the under-21s and the 18s respectively, looking good on the pitch but still potentially problematic off it, as Fulham fans' hashtag Stop the Greed campaign gets underway, and we'll be hearing the latest on that in just a moment.
This is Love Sport.
It hasn't been a great season for Fulham on the pitch, and it could be set to get worse off it as the fans' hashtag Stop the Greed campaign gets underway. This is, of course, with reference to the steadily rising cost of tickets at Craven Cottage. The fans, some of whom joined me in the studio, have finally had enough. They're going to do something about it, but the club are sort of trying to get in your way.
Yeah, so if I could speak, that'd be really helpful. So basically, we started this campaign a month or two ago, and it was you know, we were had enough for the ticket prices, you know, £55 for the cheapest ticket behind the goal, and it was in comparison to the cheapest prices compared to the rest of the league. You could get a ticket at probably half the rest of the top six clubs, cheapest ticket at home behind the goal, cheaper than our cheapest ticket behind the goal. And you know, we started a GoFundMe page which raised around £1,000, I believe. And then so this was just to fund banners and for our advertising campaign. So we got 10,000 or so flyers which we'll be flying around on Saturday outside the ground and within the ground. And we also got these banners which to be made about Stop the Greed and why we were so angry. But you know, we obviously, because they're so big, you need with any banner or flag above a certain size, you need to ask the club and email them the design and let them know if you're allowed in. But they came back to us and they weren't going to have this. They came and says they believe the overall message, particularly the word greed, is disappointing given the amount the Khans have invested, and they don't want to protest that detracts away from the message from the team. Now, if we look at the Liverpool game in our last home game, they will happily let a load of scousers in the game for a premium price of £55. They're more than happy to sell them the memberships and more happy to sell them to that. And apparently that's not detracting away from the team. They also think it might affect the way a supporter feels at the game. I'm pretty sure a banner protesting against the awful ticket price is of Fulham at the moment, with which the club have decided aren't going to be as affected as much as they got a load of scousers in front of them.
So what the club are objecting to here isn't the logistics of the banner. They're not saying it's too big or too unwieldy or that it is in breach of some club policy. They're actually, in a sort of free speech point of view, taking issue with what you're trying to say.
Yeah, their issue is, we don't like the word greed. It disappointed given the amount of Khans we invested in the club.
Do you think that a football club should be able to dictate what its fans want to display in the stadium? And obviously, fans shouldn't be holding banners that are racist or homophobic or include swear words, but actually a form of non-political message about the football club that you are there to support. Surely it's your right as supporters to get that message across.
Well, you know, people often say that, football fans are customers. Football fans are not customers, because customers can leave and change to another company if they want to. Football fans can't do that. We can't just say, we don't like the ticket pricing, we're going to go support, Liverpool, Spurs, West Ham, whatever. You stick to your club, you're born with it and you die with it. And, you know, the club are saying, we don't like the word greed. And I'm just like, why can't we protest? What's particularly wrong about the word greed? You just don't want a bad message because the game's on Sky, right? They know it's going to be on TV, and that's the reason we chose this game to protest for. In essence, by stopping us bringing the banners in, they've made it worse for themselves. By saying you're stopping fans' right of free speech, you know, it's not anything defamatory on it.
Yeah, and let's be clear, there's no safety reason why it can't be there. They haven't told us we can't bring it in because of, you know, fire regulations or anything like that. They haven't said, you know, there's no kind of legal safety reason that we can't bring it in. They're stopping us because they don't like the message that we're talking about here.
So if you were to, for example, print off large numbers of A4 sheets with the slogan hashtag Stop the Greed on them, would they try and stop you bringing in those as well?
I think they wouldn't be able to, because you wouldn't have to apply to the club and say we're going to bring this in, because you know it's that it's, if something's over a certain size, you have to send a message to the club, and you know it's just another way of the club disillusioning themselves from the fans and not helping themselves, because it's been a massive social media campaign. Loads of people have put it in their Twitter names, in their Twitter bios, been responding to any ticket related tweets from the club. We've stopped the greed, and so I think in essence, I know they don't want this message to be played on Sky Sports, but in essence, they're making it worse for themselves, because then you know the media outlets are going to catch on to this, saying they're not allowing this in the ground. We're going to be having a massive protest outside the ground. We've got 10,000 flyers to give away. We still have the banners. We can have the banners outside the ground, which we'll make sure gets caught on TV. Tony Khan and Ali Mack come out in where the cottage gates are to when they're going in, when the players going in. We can easily get a picture with the, you know, Stop the Greed banners out there. So they're not so much bring it in the vicinity of the ground, which we still get social media output of. So it's just a very, very, very weird one for me.
Do you think this is a case of the people who are running the club not understanding the feelings of the fans, or do you think it's a case of them perhaps not caring?
I think it's probably the people that we've spoken to are trying probably to cover their own backs. The people that we're directly speaking to and who have stopped this, you know, they maybe don't want the messages to be shown to those higher ups, to the Ali Macks, the Khans at the top. I think, you know, from my point of view, we've pushed this hard. We've got lots of people. We mentioned, you know, how much money we raised through the GoFundMe page. You know, these are all people who have put their own hard-earned money
to help us. It's not just us as a podcast. We've gone and bought this. Other fans have put their own money into this campaign, and the club are saying, "Oh no, we're not allowing this in." So you're making these other fans waste their money while you're grabbing even more of their money by raising these ticket prices to 55 quid, by selling them to Scousers who are not going to celebrate. If you look at the front three rows when Ryan Babel scores, there is no one standing up. So the club, quite frankly, has just been a disgrace all season long.
And that obviously is compounded by the fact that the performances on the pitch haven't actually been up to scratch. Is an aspect of this the fact that the likelihood is looking like Championship football next season? And so the view surely should be towards trying to reduce ticket prices rather than amping them up.
Well, if we look at Newcastle, last game of the season, right, that's a Category A game. They've made it a Category A game when they decided all their ticketing structuring for the rest of the season. So you could tell me Newcastle could be safe, Fulham could be resigned to relegation, we're definitely down, and we could possibly be getting one of the worst points tallies and most goals conceded in Premier League history, and yet a ticket's still 55 quid for that game. Yes, you can say, oh, the Riverside Stand will be getting redeveloped next season, they need to increase their money somehow, but come on, you're a football club. Matchday revenue, really, what does that mean to you? I think they've seen we got into the Premier League trying to make a quick buck, and us fans can't stand for it because, you know, it's our club more than theirs. They'll come and go, the owners, the directors, the director of footballs, whoever decides these sort of things, they'll come and go, but we'll still be here. So, you know, and the problem is, if you speak to someone like George, who isn't a season ticket holder, You'll see that, you know, the reason why people get attracted to this club before was the ticket pricing and how much of a family club this is. You're not making it a family club, you're making it a club for rich people.
When Shahid Khan joined the club in his first interview with us, he said, "I'm not the owner of this club, I'm purely the custodian. I'm just here to look after it for the fans."
It's a good line, that, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is where he's failing. You know, he's making it difficult for the fans. You've got, you know, I think we'll come on to in a bit, I've got an article coming out, you know, giving some of my personal experiences about this and how, as a non-season ticket holder, I've been affected, and I now can't go to games myself because I can't afford to go. I can't afford to spend £60 to go on a Tuesday night to go watch us against Brighton. You know, it's become, you know, an untenable thing for me to do. And, you know, it's for every person, like, you know, for every, I'm impacted, but there's thousands of other people like me, and these other people, they're going to walk away from the club, and you're, by trying to cash in as soon as the times are good, you know, the first time in a long time we've been in the top level of English football, they're cashing in, you know, they're just milking it absolutely dry, and when we're back down in the Championship next year where we are, I really worry about the amount of fans we're actually going to get going to the games.
Any fan being unable to go and watch their team live because of financial constraints is obviously a terrible thing. But do you think this is Fulham's problem specifically, or is this actually just the direction that football is moving in this country?
I think it's Fulham's problem. I mean, the statement that was made that we're the third most expensive ticket behind the goal, which Dom has said, and you know, that's not right. considering the position that we're in, you know, like in, and other clubs are showing across the world that it can be done. You know, it is possible to have cheap season tickets. I mean, people always look to Germany.
Bayern Munich, but yeah. Also in Spain, Barcelona, Real Madrid, you're looking at €300, give or
yeah.
take.
And then even looking in this country in the Premier League, like Huddersfield, they didn't raise their season ticket prices for the past 2 years
but
either.
You do have to watch Huddersfield.
Yeah, and you have to live in,
we've got to watch
live
Fulham.
In and around Huddersfield. That's completely fair. But yeah, I mean, it's match day revenue, as we've said so many times before, is like at 0.something% of the revenue that the club's going to make. And I know we used to have a chief revenue officer, we don't anymore, but I don't know, it really is, like, they're objecting to the word greedy, but that is literally what it is.
Well,
it's just
what I don't understand is they say, oh, as long as tickets are being bought, we can sell them this rate, which I understand from a business model perspective, but if you look at next season, you're not going to, every Premier League team, or especially a team like Fulham, you're always going to get tourists, you're always going to get day trippers buying tickets anyway, because, you know, it's when people are in London, oh, let's go watch a game of football, a nice afternoon hero like Fulham for £55, let's go, or whatever. But, you know, you've got to look at it, in the Championship next season, when we've got one stand being redeveloped, you're not going to be selling these tickets on a Tuesday night, for even if you look at £30, £35, for Fulham versus Barnsley, when we're probably both sitting in mid-table, and no one's interested. It doesn't going to work like that. And you're disillusioning so many fans within one season just to get a bit of money.
And the club have pointed to games like the Burnley game, like at the beginning of the season, where they were like, it was like kids for £1, or it was really cheap for kids, and it was like £25 was maybe the maximum price or something. And they're like, look, we do have the odd game where it's cheap, but that's not the point, isn't
yeah.
it? You know,
that was before they decided their ticketing strategy for the season, because it was yeah. so early on.
Yeah, exactly. And like we said, I mean, even announcing, putting on sale the last six games of the home season all at once was just ludicrous, really. Like, that's just not something that, I don't know, and having the membership open to Liverpool fans who spoke about it before, it's just like, the strategy is just completely wrong.
So what are you guys actually calling for here? What are you advocating? Are you looking for a change of owner, a change of structure, or are you actually saying, listen, we're broadly satisfied with the current system, but you just need to keep the prices down?
Yeah, I've got nothing against Shay Khan. I think since he's come in, he learnt his lessons when we got relegated the first time, and he's invested a lot in the club, which we're thankful for. But, you know, you've got to reanalyze things and realize what this club's morals are and what this club's philosophy is, not as a football team, but as within its community. You know, you're pricing out fans from, they might as well go and support Chelsea at this rate, or they might as well support AFC Wimbledon. You know, you're pricing out fans for what reason? For a bit of financial gain over one season? Like, I just don't see it. You know, as we said, matchday revenue means nothing. Means absolutely nothing, and they're just trying to make a quick buck because they've seen we've been in the Premier League this season. You know, when we were in the Premier League last time, we didn't need to do it, and we weren't getting as much money from the TV that time, so why do you need to do it now?
I think for a lot of clubs out there, their identity is how they play football on the pitch. So for Barcelona, for, you know, all these different teams out there, their identity is their style of football. For Fulham, the style of football changes, you know, multiple times within a season, but for us, the Fulham's identity has always been a family club, an approachable club, and an affordable club. And when I first started supporting them, that was, you know, that was the unique selling point of Fulham, that it was the only place you could actually, you know, get affordable tickets to go and watch high quality football. And by changing the ticketing strategy as, you know, as violently as they have, and, you know, multiplying and maximising their profits as much as they have, you know, we're losing that core identity. We're losing that, you know, the family friendly bits of our club. With I don't know if anyone remembers the number, but I think someone mentioned something like the cheapest kids ticket for one of the games was something like £75, or they were selling, you know, child's tickets for a restricted view seat for £75. I mean, by doing that, that's stopping parents going, that's stopping parents taking their kids along, and that stops the next generation of football of Fulham fans coming through.
It stops the whole atmosphere around the ground as well. The focus from the club seems to be on banning that word greed, but you can't ban a banner outside the stadium, as Don Betts was suggesting. They will be there. They will be there in force, and the message will be clear. Hashtag stop the greed.
This is Love Sport.
London calling? No, it's Theresa May calling, actually begging you to just let her get it done. She has, of course, promised Tory MPs that she'll stand down if they back her EU withdrawal deal. But there's a spanner in the works. The DUP have said they won't be supporting May's deal, which basically means she's doomed. MPs are currently voting on 8 alternative Brexit options. We should have the results of those for you shortly after 9:30. But in the other great political scandal of modern England, hashtag stop the greed at Fulham Football Club. This is about the fans protesting against persistent ticket price hikes. Obviously, the guys around me from Fulhamish, it's George Singer, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow, are part of the people involved in getting banners with that hashtag stop the greed emblazoned over them. The club have said they're not allowed to take them into the stadium for this weekend's clash against Man City because they object to the word greed. But that's not the only thing that's being planned. And George, you've got an article coming up about your experiences with these ticket prices.
Absolutely. So I think a lot of the stories you've probably heard from the Fulhamish guys, you know, it's people like Dom, Sammy Farrell, these are all season ticket holders, and you know, they've been following Fulham for years and years. They will get a season ticket year in, year out, and they're maybe not as affected in the same way as some of the other people like me are by these ticket prices. So I'm just a member of Fulham. I have been for kind of 3 or 4 years now, probably a bit longer actually. One day I'd love to get a season ticket, and I'd love to go week in, week out, go to Craven Cottage, but I'm at the point in my life now where I just can't afford to do that. All I can actually afford to do is just come along to, you know, a handful of games throughout the season. And, you know, normally that's been kind of plenty for me. I've loved doing that, kind of coming to the cottage 5 to 10 times a year, maybe go to the odd away game that I can get to as well. And I've been doing that for a few years. So, you know, when I first started following the club was around kind of the 2010 time, so our Europa League run. And before that, I'd watched a few Fulham games. You know, I would never pretend to be kind of the biggest Fulham fan in the world, but you know, for me it was really that Europa League run which really, you know, it was those times where I really properly fell in love with the club. And I, you know, ever since I've been a huge fan. And for me, the reason why I fell for Fulham was the affordability of going to these matches, these Europa League matches, whether it was from kind of FK Vetra, Akmar Perm going through, playing against Roma, you know, playing against Wolfsburg, Shakhtar, Hamburg. You know, those moments were so special to watch and see in the flesh, see this plucky little club from Southwest London beat heavyweight after heavyweight, knocking out Goliath after Goliath. And the reason I was able to go and see them and see these moments was the ticket prices. They were, I remember for the first few games I snuck in as a kid, you know, bought a youth ticket and I'd pay a fiver to go and watch quality English European football. And you know, if the ticket prices weren't as low as that, I'd never be able to go to as many matches as I did. And for years after, whether it's the Premier League or going down to the Championship, Fulham were always the affordable place in London to go and watch football. You know, you'd never be able to get a ticket at Arsenal or Chelsea or Spurs, but in Fulham there was always this kind of home where I could afford and get tickets at a reasonable price. And especially when you're younger and you're not flush for cash, that's exactly what you're looking for. And you know, for the last kind of 4 or 5 years, I've been to as many games as I can, and I've been able to do that because the tickets have been reasonable. You know, both in the Premier League and the Championship, they're around kind of the £20 or £30 mark you could normally get, or if you went restricted view, you could get it even cheaper. And then what we saw at the kind of tail end of last season, I've spoken about it before, the Brentford game, so local derby, which is, you know, is always going to be a tasty game, always going to be a game that people want to go to. We were in touching distance of automatic promotion. You know, the 3 points at that time would have been huge. And what happened? The club hiked up the prices. As soon as we were an attractive proposition, as soon as we were the golden ticket for that weekend, the club hiked the prices up. It cost me kind of over 40 quid to go to the game. And, you know, for a one-off, that was absolutely fine. It was a huge game. I wanted to support the team. But, you know, it wasn't just me who was affected. For such a huge game, the fact that it didn't sell out was ridiculous. And it was a partially filled stadium. The fans quickly got on the players' backs. It was a bit of a dogged performance, you know, a bit scrappy.
So do you think that forcing the fans to play more, or pay more rather, if you force the fans to play, that would be an interesting outcome. Do you think that makes them expect more from the players and be harsher on the players?
I think partly, and I think it does when you raise the ticket price. You know, I've got to invest more of my money to go and see the club. I'm going to expect more, and, you know, rightly or wrongly, I think that happens. And then when we perform as badly as we have this season, that's, you know, I'm going to become more upset about it. I'm less likely to come along in the future. And I think if we continued with this affordable ticket pricing strategy that we did throughout the years, and we've had it throughout, you know, this year, if people like me were actually allowed to, you know, could actually afford to come along to games like this, then I think the Fulham fan base wouldn't be as unhappy and kind of frankly angry as they are right now.
And crucially, that Brentford game you mentioned was on TV, which is another, like, why, I don't know, like, if you might have had a membership, or if you're just a casual Fulham fan, why would you go when you can watch it on TV down the pub? So that's the point I was going to make. And, you know, like, we've seen a lot of stick that Sky have got from Fulham fans when we're in the Championship as well, for just moving fixtures. As soon as you start playing well, they'd move your fixtures Friday night, Monday night, wherever, just get you on TV. Yeah? And we should all be on the same side, the club and the fans, against that kind of thing, you know? Making sure fans can't get back from games, or they can't get to games.
But equally, the club have a responsibility, don't they, to run it in a financially responsible, financially advantageous way. And if getting put on the telly helps the prices, then isn't there an argument that they should be taking that money but then making it cheaper for you as a result?
Yeah, and I mean, there were instances where the club might lay on a coach or whatever to an away game, where fans, is literally impossible to get back from. But that's not the way it should be.
That should be common sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the club shouldn't get any, you know, congratulations for that. The club and the fans should be united together, which is, of course, what they are in, you know, in the support of the team. And they should be united together against, you know, making sure that they don't get messed around by TV companies, rather than infighting, which is what we've got at the moment.
I think what we saw on that game against Brentford was both Fulham and Sky trying to cash in. And I think the fans very quickly, and by, you know, not turning up to the game, not selling out a huge game like that, that was an immediate protest against Fulham cashing in the first opportunity that it was a really big, important game and they knew lots of people would want to go. They cashed in and hiked up the prices. If they knew it would be on telly, and any time you put a game on telly, you're going to get less fans going. It's just the law of averages. You know, there'll be fans out there who won't be bothered to go because they know they can just watch it on TV. So keep that in mind, you know, lower the prices, get more fans in. And what we saw on that day, a partially filled Craven Cottage, the fans got on the back. We conceded a last-minute equaliser. You know, yeah, we got promoted in the end. But I remember the conversations we were having afterwards would be, you know, what if we had that full stadium? What if we had a fan base who were, rather than squabbling about ticket prices, actually, you know, backing the players? Could we have got over the line there? And this is something that happened last year, and we spoke about it and we thought, oh, you know, surely the club have learned their lesson. Surely the club have realised that if you hike the prices up, you know, we showed if you hike the prices up, people won't go to games. You'll lose your fan base. The club saw that. The club had, a small sample size there, but they saw it happen. And their response has just been to do it more this season. It's just bonkers.
The fans are obviously outraged by that. The club have sort of tried to respond to this in some sense by saying, listen, you can't take in banners including the phrase hashtag stop the greed, because we object to the term greed because of the amount of money that the Khans have put into the club. Obviously, you're not happy about that. The banners will still be on display outside the clubs. Don Betts was saying just a few moments ago that you'll be doing everything possible to get them on TV still, get them on those Sky cameras. But that's not all you're going to do in terms of protest on Saturday, is it?
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, we've got 10,000 flyers. But I'll hand over to George. What's our massive game plan?
What's the game plan? So if you're a Fulham fan listening, three things to do. Firstly, come grab a flyer off one of us. There's going to be loads of the Fulhamish guys. We've hopefully got a load of volunteers as well who are going to help us distribute 10,000 flyers, which is going to be a difficult job. So that'll be a fun thing to do before the game. Come find us. Come grab one of those flyers. Second thing, 55th minute to kind of symbolise the fact that £55 is the cheapest behind the goal seat we've got for the game. On the 55th minute, we want all fans in the stadium hold up the flyer and chant "Stop the greed." I think we've got, you know, we'll make it clear what the chant will be. You know, we need to make sure on the 55th minute we send a message that the club cannot ignore. It's going to be right smack bang in the view of Ali Mack and the Khans in the Riverside. You know, we need to shout loud and make sure that we portray a message that they just can't ignore. And then thirdly, we're going to do loads of stuff outside the stadium. We've got banners. You know, we need your help to spread the word. We need you to talk about it on social media. We need you to use the hashtag Stop the Greed, and we need to unite as a Fulham fan base, which, you know, as Fulham fans, we're often, you know, kind of teased for being a bit timid and a bit docile at times. But this is a time where we really need to come together. You know, we need to band together and have one loud voice. We need to tell the owners that they need to stop what they're doing and they need to stop the greed.
And if active protest doesn't garner any kind of genuine response from the club, what's the next step? Would you be looking at a boycott of games?
Well, I think, you know, there's lots of messages going on at the same time. So obviously we've got this big protest coming this weekend. We've got the Fulham Supporters Trust who are going to release some data about a large fan survey that they did. And, you know, in reality, we're not going to see the output of this until next season. You know, for the ticket prices for this season have been set. It's very unlikely they're going to change. So we're not going to see the output of this for a while. So, you know, we need to stay on this. We need to, you know, keep the pressure on the board and keep the pressure on the people who will be making those decisions over the summer. We need to make it clear that, you know, probably in the Championship, that's the time more than ever when we need to invest in our fan base. We need to keep the cottage being full, because last time we went down from the Premier League to the Championship, you know, we could never sell out a game. You know, the amount of fans dropped hugely. So I think, you know, we need to continue to send that message that now's the time to invest in the fans.
One man who was playing for Fulham before they came up to the Premier League and may well still be playing for them next season is Ryan Sessegnon. He's young, he's English, he's exciting, he's Fulham through and through. But has Premier League promotion affected his development? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and a real shining light of Fulham's promotion campaign from the Championship was a certain Mr. Ryan Sessegnon. Shifted back from left back further up the pitch in a more attacking midfield wing role, he really excelled. He got amongst the goals and was a massive part of that promotion push. Tip for big things in the Premier League, but it hasn't quite clicked for him in the same degree. Do you think this season has affected his development?
I don't think it's necessarily affected it. It's possibly made not maybe he knows how talented he is, and I think Fulham fans have seen that. I think, you know, if you're just watching match of the day highlights of Fulham, which is obviously what most Premier League fans see, you may see a player who had a lot of potential, a lot of plaudits, and was linked with massive money transfers in the summer to massive clubs, and you haven't seen him. But are you still, if you're looking at under 21 English players in Europe, in the top three or four for creating chances, he's created a lot of chances. He's been getting in the right position. It's just his finishing touch isn't there, and I think that's due to confidence more than actual him not being as good as people think he is. And I think, you know, this season's maybe he maybe not be doing as well as people were expecting, but it's maybe being an eye-opener, and he can build on this next season in the Championship.
Yeah, definitely. The question we've got written down is, has it affected his development? Well, I guess it has, but only time will tell, like, if it's negative or positive. I mean, you could say that going through this experience at such a young point in his career is, like, could be crucial later down the line. I mean, no one wants relegation on their CV. He's going to have one from a very, very early age. But this is only. He's already had three full seasons, and he's going to turn 19 in May. And that is more than, like, you know, I would say more than like 98 or 99% of players.
Well, he's near enough. I think he's only two or three games away from a 100 league appearance for Fulham. I think he's made over 100 appearances in all competitions. But, you know, to be not even 19 years old and have 100 league appearances for a team in the top flight. Yes, I know most of them have been in the Championship, but you know he was playing so much, and he's in essence not really had a break in the last 3 years because he's had international tournaments in the summer, and I think this summer is a time for him to sit back, relax.
Well, he probably goes to the under-21s.
He probably will go to the 21s. I just think he needs time to sit back, relax, and then next season be ready to go again. He knows what the Championship's about. He knows how he can cause so much damage in that league. He didn't win every single award going at the Football League Awards last year. So I think, you know, I don't think it's affected his development. I think it could be a good thing for his development that he can then build on this next season. And I think it's important that we still look at Ryan Sessegnon's age. I mean, he's not even 19 yet.
But I was going to say, you also mentioned earlier, like, he was linked with moves last year. I mean, he's linked with the England squads at the World Cup last year, but I still think he will be linked with moves this summer as well. I mean, we're growing more confident day by day, it seems, over keeping him, but I think bids will come in inevitably. And, you know, if a club's ticketing policy is anything to go by in terms of money, then they're just going to accept one straight away. And I mean, he's an asset. And this is one of the things where people are like, oh, Fulham spent 100 million, Fulham spent 100 million. We always had Ryan Sessegnon on the bank, you know. We all could always sell him at the drop of a hat because he is one of the most exciting talents in English football. For at least, I mean, you know, the value of players is fluctuating constantly, but we probably could have sold him last summer for like £50 million, yeah?
I think that'll still be our asking price this summer,
yeah.
I'm being honest. And it's like, is anyone going to cough up £50 million for a player who didn't prove it in the Premier League?
But well, look at Jack Grealish. I mean, Villa kind of did the same thing where they went, listen, we've got this young, homegrown talent. You can have him, but you're not having him cheap. And actually, because he hadn't done it quite on the massive stage, people are a bit wary of taking that punt.
He hasn't done it in the Championship. He's scored like 10 goals in
three
years.
I think he's a hype job, but yeah, everyone else seems to disagree.
I think Sess's stock has definitely fallen compared to last year for right or wrong reasons. Obviously, he was the big thing coming out of the Championship. He won every award going, and because of that, you know, his price would be at an all-time high. And I think in some ways this actually might help for them. You know, I do think we've got a fairly good chance of keeping, you know, more of this squad than probably most people think. You know, we're going to sell a few of the guys, but I think we're going to hold on to more of these young, exciting players than people think. And I think in some ways, Sess, I don't think struggling is the right word, because I think he's probably played pretty well, but he certainly hasn't set the league alight. And, you know, I think for the big clubs out there, let's face it, the guys who'd want to buy him, your Chelsea's, your Spurs, whatever, they will want players who are, you know, tailor-made and ready to hit the ground running in the first team.
Spurs might not. This is something that comes up a lot when I talk to the guys from Last Word on Spurs on a Thursday night for the Love Sport Spurs fan show. The guys there are very, very aware that Tottenham Hotspur aren't really in the market for the pre-made superstar in the way that Chelsea are. They are looking for players who come with a reputation, of course, like the likes of Heung-min Son, but who aren't already global superstars. They were heavily linked last summer, and you could see Pochettino looking at Sessegnon and going, well, it's quite a lot of money, but he fits that bill of not yet unattainable, but potentially world-class.
Yeah, and you could argue that every top six club, apart from Liverpool, needs a left-back, needs a left-sided player.
Arsenal are gasping for a left-back.
I mean, Mendy's played like 20 games in 2 years at City. Maybe not Chelsea, but then, you know, yeah.
Do you think Sessegnon's a left back though?
No, he's definitely not. He's definitely a left midfielder, a left winger. You can tell that by his attacking instincts and his lack of sort of defensive strength. But I think one thing is, look at going into the World Cup, going into the summer, he probably would have been held in higher regard than definitely Callum Hudson-Odoi and possibly even Jadon Sancho. I know Jadon Sancho was doing it in the Bundesliga, but it's not as well as he has been this season. All the talk was Sessegnon to the World Cup. There was no talk about Sancho to the World Cup. So his stock has, as you said, definitely fallen, but there is that. But I mean, we know the ability's there. We know the potential is there. I reckon if we were to stay up, he would actually have a good season in the Premier League next season. If we were to just about stay up by the skin of our teeth, and then he could build on next season, I think it would be another year for him to build on. But this year's tough for him. I think he should stay. I always thought he should stay at Fulham until he's 20, 21, and then he can go to a big club. But obviously that's another 2 or 3 years away, and I can't see him staying that long.
And if he does stay, and Fulham do get relegated, he obviously scored a lot of goals in the Championship last time round. Would you be looking to him as Fulham fans and going, that's 20 goals, please, Ryan?
I think you wouldn't. I think you need to. You know, I think we're all resigned to Mitrovic leaving. He's, you know, scored a healthy proportion of Fulham's goals, and we need people like Cesc to stand up. I think if you've got a talent, you know, someone as talented as he is, and if you play him in the right position, which is the left winger in a front three, he will get you goals because he's got that knack of being in the right place at the right time. You know,
arriving at the far post.
Yeah, he's not your classic winger, kind of touchline, you know, just running up and down, putting crosses in. He cuts in. He's more, you know, honestly, in the future, I think he's more than likely to move central and move into more of like a poaching role. Because that's,
well, Gareth Bale did that. He went left back, left winger, central attacking midfielder. Yeah.
And whilst I normally think it's a bit of a lazy comparison, in some ways I can see that happening. And certainly for the last couple of years in the Championship, that wouldn't have been the right thing to do, because you put, you know, someone as, you know, he's got a lot stronger now, but a couple of years ago he was still a boy, and he would have got flattened by some of the Championship centre backs. But I think next season, now he's grown, he's got more experience under his belt. I think this is the time where we really could see him move into maybe a bit more of a focal role, bit of a central role. I just hope to God that he's at the far end of the pitch and not back at left back.
Not wasted at left back, of course. Fulham aren't the only Fulham-related team in action, because it's a privilege to be able to say that AFC Fulhamish had their first game on Saturday. But how did they get on? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio, and it's from West London to Westminster, because we've got some big political news coming into the studio. By 441 votes to 105, MPs have voted to approve the secondary legislation to change the date of Brexit in UK law. It's still got to be approved by the House of Lords, but once that happens, it means the new legal date for the UK's departure will now be the 22nd of May. That's if the Prime Minister's deal is approved by the Commons before the end of this week. So many ifs still, I'm afraid. If that deal isn't approved, the new date for Brexit will be the 12th of April, so leaving us significantly less time. And the Speaker, John Bercow, has just announced that he's suspending Commons business until the result of the Brexit indicative votes is known. He suggested we won't be waiting all that long for those, and we will have the details from them as we get it. But to more important matters and non-professional football. So, AFC Fulhamish.
That's
if
very
you, if you saw guys pulling the centre off on the weekend, it was definitely professional.
Sorry, let me rephrase that. Football of a professional quality, which has unfairly not been recognised with financial compensation.
Yeah, and a professional ethic, I'd say, as well.
And a professional
and attitude,
ethic.
All of it.
Dieting, know, just no nights out, total perfect athletes all round. AFC Fulhamish. It's a new club. It's a new outfit. Talk me through it. Who's in charge? Who's the gaffer?
Who do we say is the... Was it Sammy?
Sammy was captain first half, the founder of Fulhamish, and Ben Jarman took over the arm...
Well, he just stole the armband.
He just took the armband.
Is there a manager?
No.
No.
If anything, it was Mr. Farrell Monk as a player manager. But Guy got man of the match. So.
I did get man of the match.
So I was hearing rumours midweek, Mr. Barlow, that you were a rock of a centre-half.
Yeah, I played there. I was loud. I'd say that's mainly the reason I got... that award. I mean, we won 3-1. I didn't contribute to either any of the goals.
But you're a centre half. That's not your job, Guy.
Yeah, well, and it was actually quite a funny game. Like, we were losing 1-0, went down early on. Goal did come down your side, Dom, but it wasn't your fault. And then,
I was the left back's fault.
Yeah, it was the left back's fault.
What kind of footballer is Dom Betts? I need some analysis.
He's a tricky yet hungover winger.
Right, so are we talking tricky in the footballing sense, or is he just difficult?
Bit of both, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but then that came the first highly questionable decision of the game.
Was there VAR in use?
I'm afraid not. I was asking for the ref for it. But so the ball was going down the right. Was it Nick who fouled?
Stupid tackle.
Stupid tackle in the box, put in the penalty. Jeff Bruce, Fulham's web manager, steps up.
Wow, that's a job title.
Hits the post. And then comes back, he taps it in. The referee gave the goal, didn't he?
And I walked away. I thought it was a goal. I didn't know this rule. But the rule is, if it comes back off the post and you touch it again, then it's disallowed.
Yeah, really?
That's correct.
Yeah. So because no one's touched it in between.
Oh, I see. So it would have to, if a different player followed in, that would be
and
allowed.
If the goalkeeper saved it, it would have been fine. But because it's come off the woodwork. But who I think someone pointed
Jack
out,
Collins.
Yeah, so JC pointed it out to the referee. It's like a joke, saying, "Oh no, that should be chalked off." And then he genuinely chalked the goal off about a minute later.
Having conversed with his second, third, and fourth officials,
he was just like, "Yep, yeah, okay, yeah, I guess so." And then goal kick.
Oh dear! And then, okay, strong referee.
No,
clearly
that wasn't his last hiccup, shall we say?
Right.
So basically, we should have been 2-0 down.
Was this a professional referee?
He was a championship ref.
He was paid.
Okay, so that's
a
yes.
It was a referee who was paid.
Yeah.
Okay. Professional referee, questionably not.
Did he have a black shirt with a white collar?
He did have he had the full kit, yeah.
Well, there we go then.
Yeah.
Professional.
And then we went unequalised.
Yeah.
Jack Collins with a marauding run.
Definitely had a shot, which turned into a cross, which someone put away.
Yeah, Sammy headed in at the near post to make it 1-1, and we were back in the game, weren't we?
Half time. Easy. Get in half time, get your shape, and then we came out. Really well.
Get your
and
shape.
We did. And
the second goal's great. So Dave Preston, who's playing number 8, has gone on a marauding run right through the team. He's getting through.
When you say number 8, are we talking box to box midfield player?
100%.
Yeah. So he got into the opposition's box. He's down the right flank. There is a clear opportunity to pass it across to Mr. Jack Collins, right? Jack's calling for it, which then brings the goalkeeper over about a yard or so. Then Dave Preston goes...
Just scores at the near post.
Yeah.
God, that's so village.
Yeah, so
it's
masterclass.
That's actually upset me.
It's masterclass from Jack Collins to bring the goalkeeper over, isn't it? And it's definitely not a shot from Dave Preston either.
Yeah, he scuffed at the outside of his foot. Yeah.
They all count. And the third and final goal?
It was similar, ball over the top.
Yeah, so Nath ran through. And he ran at the goalkeeper about 3 different times, and then he hit the ball so wide it hit the post, and then I think Dave Preston smashed it in.
Yeah, again like a near post finish. But the striker went through on
like
goal.
The opposition goalkeeper might need some questions.
We're absolutely clinical. You know, that's all it was.
I apologise.
I thought Ross had a decent game.
But we've missed out the key moment at 2-1.
Oh my god!
Where my centre back partner Ben Jarman. Playing out from the back, as we do, FC Fulhamish.
And he's wearing the captain's armband.
He's now wearing the captain's armband and the number 5, you know. Proper centre-back number as well.
Do you have proper kits, by the way?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Lovely.
Donned them for the first time, it was great. And anyway, he loses the ball and striker's through on goal. He tugs him back so blatantly. And the striker still gets a shot away, which a goalkeeper saves, goes out for a corner. And I guess based on that, the referee didn't give what should have been a red card and a free kick.
Yeah, the referee... didn't look like he was giving an advantage, though. It was just no reaction whatsoever. So he clearly didn't think Ben has somehow fouled him. Then he has shot, which was saved well by Greg. But it was the most stonewall penalty I think I've ever seen.
It was technically outside the box, but it was a stonewall red card. And it was just like, it was just silence. Like, there was nothing. It was like the penalty. Like, it was so blatant, both decisions. Like, even when Nick, the right back, gave away the penalty in the first half, I shouted, like, don't dive in there, and just made it the referee's mind for him.
Right, always
and
good.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't know, yeah, the referee had a shocker, but...
We won.
3 points, 3 points, yeah. There you go.
A glorious debut for AFC Fulham. It's the big question, gents. Is this now a regular thing? Are you in a weekly league? Are you playing every so often? What's the story?
So we played, we were supposed to be playing Brentford Supporters Club on the weekend, but they pulled out, and we ended up playing like a kind of combination of Fulham staff, which hence why Jeff Proust, the... web manager plays.
good mate of ours, Jeff.
But the plan is definitely to get some other supporters clubs and maybe get that game with Brentford going, and then we'll see what happens.
If you ever need a completely useless lanky centre half, I am all yours and available for just a small fee and a printed kit to more professional footballing concerns. And I'm not saying you're not professional, I'm just saying you're not Manchester City, because that is who Fulham have got in the weekend. And in just a moment we'll be talking to Adam Waring of City Extra to get an opposition view.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and I'm joined by Dom Betts, Guy Barlow and George Singer of the Fulhamish podcast. And it is that time of the show where we look for an opposition view. Fulham have got City at the weekend, and I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Adam Waring of City Extra. Good evening, Adam. Thanks very much for joining us.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having us on.
Not at all. Do you think that City's forwards, the likes of Raheem Sterling, who's been in such good form for England, Sergio Aguero, Leroy Sané, will be eyeing up this Fulham back four and licking their lips?
Yeah, I'd like to think so anyway. But, you know, you looked at last weekend, the weekend before, with Liverpool nearly slipping up. So, you know, you never know, do you? But really, you know, we should be going to form and getting 3 points and putting in a few goals against him, you'd like to think. But you never know, because we've played a lot of games and players are looking tired at times. So you never really know at this stage of the season, to be honest. So, but you'd like to think so, yeah. You'd like to think we'd put a few past them.
Yeah, I hope our defence just opens the gates and lets you score as many as you want, just to make sure Liverpool don't win the title, if I'm being perfectly honest. I mean, I'm more than happy to take
about... That'd be great if you could do,
mate. I'm more than happy to take a 5 or 6 nil defeat here, just to make sure, you know, Liverpool don't win the title. I think that's the main objective of this game.
I think that's the general consensus across Britain, isn't it, really?
Yeah, as long as the Scousers don't win the league, that's great.
Subtle as ever, nuanced analysis on the Fulham fan show. Despite the emphasis probably being on how many goals City might be able to score, is there anyone in the Fulham lineup, Adam, who actually worries you?
Yeah, so I've been really impressed with Sessegnon. I know a lot of people have been talking about how good he is. And I'm always really impressed when I watch him play running down the wing. So I'd be really impressed to see, you know, how we cope with down the side. Obviously, Ryan Babel scored against Liverpool, so you never know. He might be he might be trying to put one over on us, because obviously I want Liverpool to win the league. So he might have a bit of an extra motivation to score against us at the weekend. So probably them two are probably looking at most. But, you know, like you say, we should still be able to have enough to beat Fulham.
So the League Cup's down. You've got that already. You're looking pretty good in the Premier League. FA Cup semis, doing well in the Champions League. Is the quadruple going to happen?
No, not in my opinion. Not in most City fans' opinions, really. You know, it's obviously possible. We've got 15 games left. We could win those 15 games. I'd be a lot more confident if we were, you know, fully fit and it was the start of the season to win 15 games on the bounce. But with the amount of games that we've played, I just don't see it being possible for us to win 15. We've got 8 games in April to play, and they're all really high-profile games. We've got to play Tottenham 3 times in 10 days. We've got a Manchester derby. I personally don't feel it's possible. And I think that's the general consensus with City fans as well. It's been more a media hype and an opposition fan hype to try and bring us down when we inevitably don't do it. The quadruple's sort of there for everyone in that side of the... That's how the world to talk about, where City fans are enjoying the idea that it is possible, because it's so exciting. But we all don't think it's possible. We don't think we can do it, really.
And obviously, this game at the weekend is 12:30 on Saturday, kicking off the Premier League football. So, I don't know, the obvious question is, do you prefer playing first in a title race like this? And so, what do you personally prefer? And what do you think, more importantly, Pep and his team prefer?
So, I think we prefer to get the points on the board first. Definitely. I know as a fan, I prefer that. And I'm sure the players prefer that as well, because you're playing second. You know that the team playing the day before has got those points down, and the pressure's really on. And obviously with Liverpool having that tendency to slip up and, you know, bottle it, as they have done on a few occasions.
Famous last words, then. Adam.
Exactly. So I'd like to think that us putting that pressure on them would make them more likely to slip up. So I'm really glad that we're playing earlier, because if we would have been playing after they played Tottenham, then we'd have been two games down on them. So, and then, you know, it's looking like everyone away with it a bit, even though we've got the games in hand. So you'd always prefer to get the on the board. I'm glad we're going to be playing first.
We've seen over the last couple of years that Pep is a manager who likes to rotate his side. He's blessed with quality in real depth, and you've talked there about the fixture congestion, 8 games in April. Do you think we'll see an absolute strongest strength City side with the likes of Aguero and Sterling, or will Pep be looking at this with half an eye on that fixture list and going, you know what, maybe this is one for a few of the second string?
So personally, I'd be going strongest. I'd be going strongest.
Oh, have we lost Adam there? I think we might have had a single problem. He was saying that he'd play his strongest team. So we're talking the full... We'll just try and get Adam back in a moment. But he was saying he'd have the full Aguero, Sané, Sterling.
I quite like that. Like, I mean, if I was a fan in that position, I'd prioritise the league over any other cups. I think the league is much more of an achievement to win. And I can definitely understand that viewpoint.
And it's still so close. Them and Liverpool, it's going to go down to the wire. So they need every point they can get.
They do. It's a serious time for them. I think we have lost Adam, unfortunately. Wonderful stuff from him, though. That was Adam Waring of City Extra. And we didn't get a score prediction from him. We'll be getting yours in a moment's time. But just quickly, does City scare you? Or are you, Don Betts, just hoping that you get battered so that Liverpool don't win the league?
Well, to be fair, like, Chelsea lost 6-0 to them, right? We've played them twice already this season in a couple of leagues, only conceded 5. So
it's a win. A moral victory.
It's a moral victory. You know, we haven't even seen a 6 in 2 games. Chelsea did it in 1. So, and to be fair, once City got the second goal against us in both games, they obviously took the foot off the gas. But I don't know. I think they will. They could easily just put about 8 goals past us. But I think it ended up being a lot less than that.
No, yeah. And it would be one of the stories of the season if Fulham did derail that City title charge.
We better not.
I don't want us to either.
Right, I'm not having any more of this. Come back in a moment because we'll be getting more of their nonsense views on Liverpool.
This is Love Sport.
Football's a sport about loyalty. Supporting your team is about passion, it's about vitriol, it's about wanting to see the team playing in your colours win, whatever the context, whoever the opposition. Isn't it?
Except on Saturday.
Except on Saturday, Don Betts. Explain why not.
We can't have Liverpool winning the league. It's just not... I'm not having that. I can't be dealing with that. We know we're going down, right? So we might as well do our best to stop Liverpool winning the league. Like, my dream was, like, either... If we were going to win, one more game for the rest of the season, I would be Chelsea at home or Liverpool at home. One, just get one over on Chelsea, or two, to derail Liverpool's start from. We nearly got someone from a couple of weeks ago. And I just don't want to see them win the league, and I quite enjoy watching City. So
I'm now in a situation where I'm sitting in a room with 3 Fulham fans who are all, I think... desperate to see their team lose at the weekend.
I'd say so. At the end of the day, like
a measured response.
Yeah,
from George,
I mean, at the end of the day, we're relegated. A win, 3 points, is going to mean nothing to us. And I'd rather see City win the title. For say what you want about the club and how they do their business and where they get their dirty money from, but they're a great side to watch. And City fans will probably win graciously, and Liverpool fans will never shut up about it.
Exactly. And the media won't shut up about Liverpool fans, we're not shutting up about it. So that's a whole added, you know, and the whole, like, you know, quotation marks, romance, they've never won the Premier League. Shut up. Like,
no one cares.
I hate it so much.
I suspect the good people of Liverpool, or certainly the red half, probably do care.
They're so entitled, Liverpool fans, and they're so, like, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I'm actually going to Liverpool this weekend for the first time in my life. It's the first time I'm ever going to be there. I'll be there for the game. Would you advise me to just stay indoors when they're playing on Sunday, just to avoid any Liverpool fans, or are they actually probably all right?
I'll just go to an Everton pub and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
I like the assumption that I would definitely be going to a pub either way. And so it's a question of which pub I choose.
And there are no actual Liverpool fans in Liverpool.
True. They're all in Salisbury.
Yeah, anyone born in Liverpool is an Everton fan. That's what they say. But yeah, I don't know.
I've got a recommendation of bars in Liverpool.
By the way, if you are Liverpudlian or a Liverpool fan or just frustrated by any of this, feel free to ring in on 0208 7020 558 or at Lovesport Radio on Twitter. There is also, beyond just the 3 points at stake this weekend, there is the question of a certain record, I believe.
There is. There's a couple that we're going for. I think as Fulham fans, this is probably probably one of the targets we can actually go for. So we've mentioned before about the we can be the worst away Premier League side ever, which would be good. obviously, we can't impact that this weekend. But the one I'm going for personally is the most goals conceded. So if I'm right, the record is Derby in their disastrous season 08-09.
They had Titus Bramble at centre-half.
They did.
So we're actually going for 2 of their records. Was it the away points record is theirs?
Oh, is it theirs as well?
Yeah, yeah. So we're going for 2 of their records.
You can't be worse than that Derby side. I mean, you've already got more points than them.
So if we go... I did the maths the other day. If Derby conceded 89 in that season, if we go at the current rate we're going at, we're going to concede 86. And we've got Man City to play. So if, like Dom said, if we do let them put 5, 6, 7 past us, I think we're in for a shout.
So what you're saying is that Scott Parker needs to step up to the plate, play a 2-3-5, get beaten 8-0.
That's pretty much what we were playing in the last minute against Liverpool like 2 weeks ago, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, I'm fine with the goals conceded one, as I said, but I don't want the away points one.
Why not, Guy?
Because I want to see us win away from home.
That's not happening.
I know, but...
Hang on, so who are the remaining away fixtures?
So we've got we've currently got 2 points away from home all season. Derby got three. Our remaining away fixtures are Watford, Bournemouth and Wolves.
So Watford have got nothing to play for because they've got the FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, they're still going for seventh, though.
They're not going to be going for seventh because they've got the FA Cup semi-final like in a few days after we play them. And it's worked well for us. We might get a point there.
Bournemouth are quite an inconsistent
team. You know, and
Wolves... just imagine Callum Wilson and Josh King running our defence. Like,
yeah, and with the Wolves game, because we'll have already beat Watford, we'd have given Wolves clear path to seventh, so they wouldn't have anything to play for either. So, you know, easy.
I'm very positive here.
No, it's not positive. I just want one more point away from home.
So with the equal worst record instead of the worst record.
Yeah.
But, like, wasn't there that record that we broke of conceding two goals in consecutive games? It's now up to 11.
That's beautiful. Love that. More of those records need to be broken.
And that's the first time that's happened in the top flight in over 40 years. So I think...
A team. What a club.
What a fan base.
Yeah. And also for the record amount of money spent from a club being promoted as well. So we've spent more money than anyone else. And we've been worse than anyone else. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we're going to finish bottom, aren't we?
Be great if we do. Because it means we get an extra game next season. Because you've finished 20th,
you're going to an early
round in the League Cup.
Go play Wickham again.
If we actually get Wickham away again in the Cup, I don't know what I'm doing. But
You'll go.
I lasted 15 minutes last time.
You'll be there.
100% you'll be there. Leave 20 minutes in.
Yeah, because I lasted 15 minutes last time and got an Uber back to the town centre and then watched the UEFA Super Cup in a bar. I mean, if it's on the same day, I might do that again.
So is this poor season? I'm not even engaging dumb bets with that. Is this poor season a case of genuine pride for you? Or is this an instance of actually pain being quietly masked with humour?
We need to become the purest form of banter FC.
Yeah.
That's the mission now.
And if we break all those records, you might do that. But I think, this season is like... We spoke about it after the Liverpool game that, you know, we also get a bit of pride and passion back in the side. And we have got that in the two home games against Chelsea and Liverpool. Less spoken about Leicester away, probably the better. But, you know, we've got that. And as long as... You know, I don't mind embarrassing ourselves in this game just to make sure Liverpool don't win the league. But for the rest of the games after that, I'm fine. I just want a bit... Yeah, but if we get points, we get points. If we don't, we don't. Well, the big what I hope is just Mitrovic bags a hat-trick on the last day of the season against Newcastle.
That'd be good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Hopefully they'll be safe. But also like, talk about things we hope from the season. So, most goals conceded, away points. And I said this last week as well. It was worth repeating. Take Cardiff down with us.
100%. Yeah. 100%. That's got to be key, surely.
Still got to play them at home. I mean, it's getting tight. Like, we're not involved in the relegation battle, but it's it's getting tight above us. So if we can do anything to aid Man City's title push at the top and then hamper Cardiff at the bottom, that is positive we can take from the season.
And there's still a simmering dislike for Cardiff, or indeed a boiling dislike for Cardiff at Craven.
It's Warnock. It's not actually Cardiff that much. Yeah, it's Warnock. I don't like him.
I'm not a fan of his either, I'll be honest. Although I think actually Cardiff and Warnock have handled this season, which has obviously not been straightforward.
Well, no, if they stay up, he should be in for manager of the season.
Yes. I mean,
I don't want to say it.
It's been an incredibly difficult job done not just successfully, but also with dignity. That said, I'm not his biggest fan, more broadly.
Yeah. Anthony Neil Warnock content coming up very, very soon.
If you are Neil Warnock and you'd like to get in touch, you can do so on 02 08 70 20 558. But thinking about the game itself this weekend, how should Fulham set up? And I don't want any of this nonsense, let's play 10 strikers and concede 15. If Fulham were hypothetically actually interested in winning a game of football, or at the very least taking some points off Man City, how should they approach it?
I think in all seriousness, I think what we want to see going forward, are we really that interested in kind of points and results? Maybe not. For me, it's more about the style of play and how we move back to, if we had to, you know, either talk about Jukanovic or Ranieri ball. You know, I'd love to see us move back
Ranieri
to that.
Ranieri ball,
hoof ball, whatever you want to call it.
Ranierissimo or whatever the Italian version.
It's the Italian Big Sam. I think this is where we've got this, you know, this period of time risk-free. It means nothing now. We're down. So let's focus on trying to get the club playing back the right way. Have a think about, you know, what's the long-term plan? What is the plan for next year? How do we want to play? What players do we want to play? And start investing in those. You know, if we've got players in the youth team who we see as being starters next year, and I think we've got some great guys in the youth side, now's the time to start bedding them in.
I agree.
Yeah, if we want to play nice passing football, now's the time to start training the players and drilling them and getting that way. That means a lot more to me than sneaking a draw or win, a very unlikely draw or win against Man City.
Talking of looking to the future, we've got the results of the indicative votes coming through from Westminster. So these aren't legally binding. They just indicate what MPs' preferences are for the Brexit process. The first four are back, so the desire for a no deal has not been supported. 160 MPs were for, 400 were against this plan. Common Market 2.0, which would lead to a kind of alignment with the European Union, for 188, against 283. No one supporting that either. The plan for EFTA and EEA not supported either. Only 65 MPs supporting that. Customs Union, so just remaining apart, effectively not supported either, although very close. 264 for, 272 against. And the second eight, this will make you laugh, Labour's alternative plan, which is effectively a much softer Brexit. 237 for, 307 against, not supported. Revocation to avoid no deal, so effectively if it was looking like we were going to leave, the whole thing would just be scrapped. Article 50 revoked for, 184 against, 293, no majority there for support. And a confirmatory public vote, not supported either. Contingent preferential arrangements, so reacting to things as they happen, not supported either. So eight votes, no one fancies anything, no one knows what's going on. It's a bit like Fulham.
Yeah.
Do you hope, Dom, that the Brexit process is a car crash, because that might in some way stop Liverpool winning the league?
Yeah, it'd be great. If it could have a player part, it'd be great.
Every little helps.
Every little does help. Rejecting all different, you know, options is a bit like me when Ranieri picks a team. Reject that.
And looking forward to next season, is this an opportunity, the kind of game like this one against Man City, the rest of the fixtures, the run-in, if you like, is that a chance for various Fulham players, the likes of the youngsters or players who haven't really proven themselves this season, like Zambo and Gisa, to say, listen, I am here, I can be an important side of this team and I can do a job in the Championship?
Well, me and George and Guy were speaking about this off air. We'd like, once relegation is confirmed, which is hopefully the Watford game, I don't know why I said hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, only because I'm not going. Basically, was I'd start playing the team that we would most likely going to play in the Championship next season. So they've experienced playing together. You know, we know Marcus Bettinelli won't be back. You know, Stephanie Hansen, we don't know what's going to happen with him next season. But, you know, we'd like to see, you know, the likes of McDonald playing, Anguissa, Mawson's when he's back fit. You know, Christie and Brian are two very capable Championship forwards. You're not going to have Fosu Mensah at the club next season. You know, Ryan Sessegnon, Kearney. You know, obviously, we have to play Mitrovic because we literally don't have another striker.
Steven Sessegnon, Matt O'Reilly, De La Torre. Yeah. Like, bring in the youth, which is what George was talking about as well, because, like, that kind of style was instilled all the way down the academy and we bring it back up to the first team.
It is time to look to the future, but it's also time for our score predictions. What do you think is going to happen against City this weekend?
So what is it so far? I saw the 3-0 at the Etihad. Was it 2-0 again? So 1-0? 1-0 City?
Yeah, 1-0.
What's the prediction? 1-0?
1-0 to Fulham.
1-0 to Fulham. And Dom Betts?
5-1 City.
5-1 City, but he's hoping, of course, for 12. Join us next week on the Fulham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.